Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. 5 days after a gunman slaughtered 10 people, could this be the mass shooting that changes things? Students and teachers return to Santa Fe High School today. And as we learn more about that deadly shooting, what real solutions are being proposed? So after this mass shooting, what is next? We want to hear from you. What's your reaction? What do you think ought to happen? Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980. And you can email us at thesource@tpr.org and tweet at us at TPR Source. We're joined by Travis Bubinick. He is a reporter for Houston Public Media, and Mose Bushell. He's a senior reporter for KUT Austin. Travis, what is happening today at the Santa Fe?
Today, there are some students that are being allowed to, as they were over the weekend at times, go back to pick up their belongings, being escorted, having to sign in and out, not being allowed to bring any cell phones or cameras into there as they do that because the school is still partly a crime scene. There's still an active investigation going on. On that front, we haven't really heard a whole lot of new information from the FBI, which is leading up the federal investigation into this and is still on the ground. Haven't heard an official update really since Friday, although we did hear some new details this week about the timeline of how the shooting unfolded, and that came Monday from local authorities, the Galveston County Sheriff Henry Trojicet. He laid out the timeline saying basically, after the shooting started, it took officers about 4 minutes for the first police officers on the scene to engage this suspect in a shootout. He didn't say specifically how long that lasted. The FBI said it then lasted about 25 minutes where police exchanged gunfire periodically with the suspect who was barricaded in a room or a classroom. It's still unclear. Authorities have praised those first officers as heroes, saying that they kept the suspect contained to this one area of the building, and that helped police evacuate the rest of the building and save lives. But meanwhile, in Santa Fe, teachers are back at the district, but classes are still canceled for the entire district until this coming Tuesday.
So it's the 4 minutes. That's, we don't know for sure, but it seems like those 4 minutes was when the shooter, I don't want to say his name, was able to roam the halls and blast away. That's a lot of damage you can do in 4 minutes.
Yeah, and just sort of hearing experts and analysts talk about other shootings that we've seen like this, they note how they tend to, take that amount of time for multiple fatalities to happen. It is a lot of time, 4 minutes. But also, how much faster can you get, I guess, with the response? I think some of the things that we've been wondering about as this investigation continue, the unanswered questions, if you will, and what authorities aren't commenting on is, just how much gunfire was going on between police and the suspect in those 25 minutes after police first engaged the suspect. They say he was barricaded inside of a room. We don't know if that was the classroom or some other kind of small room, as the FBI has described it. We don't know whether the suspect continued shooting students after being engaged by police, or whether any students may have been hit in the crossfire by police. Galveston County Sheriff says he doesn't believe that they were, but there are some, key details to what happened as the suspect was, being fired upon from police that are still unclear.
Seems like this is a school, Santa Fe High School, that they were well prepared for this event, which of course is a sad indictment on the times that we live in, but they had active shooter drills, they had armed guards, they had faculty who were prepared for this type of events. They were allowed to carry if they wanted to. I've heard that. Is that true?
I didn't report on that specifically, but the school, from what I understand, had looked into participating in this school martial program. Which puts some extra armed security on school campuses, but hadn't yet begun the program. They were looking into it. And so what we've been wondering here is, are they perhaps going to speed that process up and get that program up and running after this? That's still another unanswered question.
Mose Bushell, KUT Austin, ace reporter there. Tell me about what's happening with Greg Abbott. He seems to be taking this with a different sort of approach that he had in the past.
Yeah, the governor has called pretty quickly after the tragedy. He called for a series of roundtable discussions, he called them, to focus on different aspects of gun safety. He's framing these things as a way of coming up with ideas from experts, from state other lawmakers, you know, policy experts, state officials, that will then form the basis of new policy proposals. That could be like policy that comes from the executive, from the governor's office, or it could be policy that is new laws proposed in the next legislative session. And we just saw the first one of those roundtables yesterday, and there's another one happening today.
Today, we are seeing that there are survivors of the shooting from Santa Fe and Sutherland Springs who are going to be present talking about their experiences and what their suggestions are for dealing with this type of shootings. And I think the question that many people have in Texas is, are our state leaders finally going to decouple themselves from the NRA and try to come up with solutions that may make the NRA unpleased?
I mean, the analysts I've spoken to suggest that's probably not going to happen. What we've heard, and you refer to victims of mass shootings. These roundtables are being billed in different ways. So the one yesterday was about school safety. The one today is about is the one that is most likely to address gun control. You know, you mentioned the NRA. And so the one today is about gun regulation and then also mental health. And the one tomorrow, I believe, is the one that focuses on victims. From what I saw yesterday, going to the first one of these roundtables, the focus was much more on policies to better protect schools, to, as the governor said, upgrade schools, like physically, to try to stop shooters from being able to enter them, increasing security, more metal detectors, things of that nature. So far, what we've heard from a lot of our state leadership is not along the lines of gun control. The things that seem to be kind of gaining a little bit more currency in some other states after the Parkland High School shooting.
And we've heard from Lieutenant Governor Dan Patrick that we need to have fewer entrances at these schools so that there can be, put people in sort of a holding area before they're allowed into a school so they can be checked out or go through some sort of screening process. I mean, but that seems like these schools are so large, that would be a safety concern in and of itself if there were some sort of disaster or a fire.
Yeah, well, I mean, from what I understand, Dan Patrick also talked about exits. Obviously, you know, concerns about school shooting might run up against other concerns. For example, fire, you know, you want to have exits in case of a fire. It really seemed, judging from yesterday, it seemed like policymakers are kind of spitballing right now. The governor, after this meeting, the media was allowed back in. This happened in private, but then reporters were let back in the room, and the governor read through a list of, it was hard to count because some of the ideas kind of overlap, but it was around 22, 23 ideas that he said had come up in the course of the discussion. Now, how seriously some of those ideas will be taken, it's anybody's guess. But again, as he said, like the idea is that some of these things may form the basis of state policy. Now, those ideas, like I said, they include some things that we've all heard before, things like increasing that school marshal program that Travis referred to help more schools, if they want, essentially arm their teachers, more metal detectors, more monitoring, as you referred to, Dave, as students enter. Some of the other ideas were new to me, things like the governor proposed statewide monitoring of student social media. And I'm not sure, again, this was all kind of vague. I'm not sure how these things.
Yeah, they're just trying to come up with ideas and see if they can be crafted to a way that could actually become have a positive outcome. But it seems like they're willing to consider anything other than some common sense gun control issues. Let's go to a caller. This is Rusty. The number is 210-614-8980 if you want to join us. And Rusty, you're on the air.
I'm on the line with you. Thank you for taking my call. I've been listening to, you know, all the debate and all the talk about what needs to be done and what we can do. And it all seems to just fall very, very short. And so the idea, and it's not the first, but we need to start talking about repeal of the Second Amendment so that we can truly have effective gun control in this country. There's many people who want absolutely no gun control. They talk about, you know, restricting guns in the hands of people who are mentally, you know, off. But I think that this is a discussion we need to be having.
All right, Rusty, thank you for that call. Repealing the Second Amendment, any sort of changing to the U.S. Constitution, is a major effort, and it was designed to be that way. And there is no active movement right now to actually repeal the Second Amendment that I'm aware of, but they can try to reinterpret the Second Amendment from the court. That's how we got to where we are today. It wasn't always the Second Amendment that we have right now. We'll talk about that and more. What suggestions do you have? What do you want to see done to try to deal with these mass shootings? What should we say at the next mass shooting? Because there's going to be another one, and there's going to be another one until something serious is done. Give us a call. The number is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. The source continues after this. Welcome back to The Source on Texas Public Radio, 89.1 FM. I'm David Martin Davies. We're talking about the Santa Fe shooting. Santa Fe High School sophomore John Robinson says he wasn't at the school when the shooting happened, but he rushed over when he heard about it. He said it was a chaotic scene.
You can't really describe the feeling, like, just, like, knowing, like, oh, my God, this is actually happening here. Like, you see it on the news all the time, and you're like, oh, that's sad. And then, like, it hits here, and it's just like, oh, like, what am I supposed to do now?
Another Santa Fe High School student, Zach Walford, says he was in class a couple of doors down when the shooting started. He says his teacher went to investigate after hearing the shots.
Our teacher ran out to go see what it was, and he said he ran back in and said he saw someone with a shotgun. So we started immediately barricading the room after we pulled the fire alarm so we could, you know, save the other people, save as many people as we could.
Wolford says he heard 20 more shots. What do you think ought to be done in the wake of the Santa Fe shooting? The number to call in is 210-614-8980, 210-614-8980. We hear clearly that our lawmakers are grappling for answers, and they probably need direction from voters. 210-614-8980. Travis Bubinick is the reporter for the Houston Public Media. We're hearing from the father of the alleged shooter that his son is a victim, that he's a good boy, and that he probably was bullied into it. So are those types of statements whipping up any sympathy?
I wouldn't say so. I mean, I don't think that anybody here, and certainly in the Santa Fe community, has any kind of sympathy for this person after these acts. Although, you know, I will say, and maybe this is just a testament to the character of the people of Santa Fe, that we heard from a couple of students who have expressed maybe not sympathy, but empathy, and have said, you know, something pushed this person over the edge. We don't know what it was, but I recall one student saying in an interview, he, you know, wishes that he could have gone back in time and, you know, found some way for this suspect to have somebody to talk to. And, you know, that's an incredible statement coming in the wake of a tragedy where your friends and family and community was so horribly affected by this person to be able to say that. But I think the father's statements about the bullying is just sort of, you know, raising further questions. I mean, again, investigators haven't released much official information about what the motive may have been, what events led up to this incident, how exactly the suspect obtained the weapons from his parents. The governor has said that that's where they came from, but we don't know whether the parents were aware that the suspect had his hands on those weapons, whether they were gifted to him, what the situation was, whether they were locked up. So, you know, every time there's more drip of who this person is, there are more questions that come along with it, just because we haven't had a lot of official information from law enforcement.
And so Travis, I understand the father trying to make sense of a senseless act and coming up with some sort of narrative that may help him do that. But it doesn't sound like he was ruthlessly bullied any more so than anyone else in school. But what about the pipe bombs? Were those real? Did that happen?
So the Houston, this was kind of a back and forth thing. So, you know, investigators and officials initially said in the immediate aftermath of the shooting that they did find explosive devices on and off the campus. That's what they were looking into for a lot of the day on Friday as this unfolded. Then they came back and said that they were fake, that the elements were there, but that they weren't actually, you know, capable of exploding. And then the Houston Chronicle reported over the weekend that actually some of them were perhaps capable of exploding. So that's another one of those things that is still under investigation that we still don't know a lot about at this point.
So Mose Buchel at KUT, you're looking at the state's response to this. As we talk about the possibility of bullying and how these students who are most likely to become shooters are social outcasts of some sort, any talk of a state solution or funding for some sort of resource individuals to be help students who are bullied or outcast and deal with this before shots get fired?
Yeah, there is. It came up over and over again yesterday at the Capitol. The idea of increasing counseling in schools, and then the idea of making schools create a kind of what the term was threat assessment that was used over and over again, which seemed to mean that, you know, they would evaluate the risk that students may become shooters and then try to intervene. The governor said at one point, I think, as early as in kindergarten, to begin identifying potentially dangerous students, and then said, well, maybe in elementary school. But to go back to the counseling was something that was brought up over and over again. What wasn't brought up, of course, was funding. Clearly, all of this would take money. Any of these suggestions we're seeing would take money from a state legislature that is, not often eager to spend money.
Right. And we got to think through that, because we have a legislature that's spending less and less money on public education. And then we're seeing schools that are having to lay off teachers. And now they're having to spend money to beef up security and build these bulletproof lobbies. And that's coming out of the local taxpayers' pocket. That's because the legislature is not passing laws that would somehow upset the NRA. So, you know, who's going to pay for all this? Let's go to the callers. Number is 210-614-8980. And this is Bart. Bart, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Thank you, David, so much. I am so happy that in Austin the governor is talking about school safety. But, you know, people seem to have forgotten about Sutherland Springs. And I just think it's important to remind everybody that we really ought to be thinking about gun safety in this country rather than just school safety, especially with the shooting in Las Vegas. And I just wonder to what extent legal liability for unsecured weapons is a potential target for making our society more safe.
All right. Thank you, Bart, for that. I've got a lot of callers here. Let's get Tony on the air. Tony, welcome to The Source.
Thank you so much, sir. Listen every day. My concern is that with our gun violence, compared to most other civilized nations, ours seems to be really skewed. And I'm wondering, are we studying the other countries on what they're doing? I know it's the NRA that really fuels a lot of the changing of the rights of the gun owners, regardless of the ridiculous amount of ammunition some of these guns take. I'm just wondering, are we studying the other countries that don't have the same type of gun violence that we have? And I'm so glad we're also talking about counseling with their children, because it, to me, it's not a coincidence that they're outcast white young men. Something's going on, and we need to look at it.
Tony, thank you for that call. Let me go to David also here. And David, welcome to The Source. You're on the air, sir.
Hi, guys. Thank you so much. I'm a great fan of the show, by the way.
Appreciate that.
My comment is basically the NRA. I've never seen an organization that has so much power with such little membership and so much money coming in from different sources that we don't even know about, like Russia and the gun manufacturers. I mean, if we take that NRA out of the way, the Second Amendment is not a problem. It becomes a tool to manage this problem. The abundance of guns everywhere is just, it makes no sense at all.
And let me go to Sandy. And Sandy, welcome to The Source. You're on the air.
Hi. I just want to say something really briefly, that this governor is fooling no one. He's just recycling his own ideas. We recently passed in Northside one of a record-setting bond, and half of that, or a good portion of it, is going towards fortifying these pre-entrance halls that are bullet-resistant glass. So half of the schools in Northside already have it. A good part of the bond will go to fortify the rest.
All right. Thank you for that, Sandy. Appreciate it. Mose Buchel over at KUT Austin. I find it interesting how there's different responses that we got from, you know, over at Sutherland Springs to what's happening in Santa Fe. It's a totally different type of reaction.
How so?
Well, I mean, don't you, in Sutherland Springs, it seems like this was, there was grief, there was mourning. There wasn't really a political reaction. I think between the two, we had Parkland, and this seems to be, they're able to draw energy from the Parkland shooting and continue that discussion.
Hmm. Well, I mean, the focus on schools especially seems to be something that really does touch a nerve with people. We send our children to schools, you know, assuming that they're going to be safe. And in fact, schools remain one of the safest places children, you know, can be. These tragedies are clearly horrible and, you know, demanding of attention. But that's not to say that schools are still unsafe in, you know, in the macro sense. But, yeah, I do think that the focus on schools is something that has really gripped the you know, people's attention right now, one has to wonder when many gun deaths, most gun deaths actually happen outside of these mass shooting contexts. Where do you place your energy? Is the problem gun deaths writ large, or is it these events that happen in these places that should be the safest places?
And Travis Bubenik, now this is goes to the courtroom. We're going to see a prosecution. We're going to be treating the 17-year-old shooter as an adult, but he does not qualify for the death penalty. Is that right?
Yes, that's what seems to be the case. And, you know, prosecutors have talked about the possibility of additional charges, but we haven't seen those yet. So that will be something to watch as well.
All right. I want to thank Travis Bubenik. He's a reporter for Houston Public Media. I want to thank you all in Houston for the reporting you've been doing on this event. And I know how hard it is to cover something like this. And Mose Buchel, thank you always at KUT Austin. Appreciate your contributions here. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for tuning us in.